This is a podcast from Consilio. We bring people together to create better places.
Hello and welcome to Better Places, a podcast from Consilio where we talk about business, politics and development. This week, Consilio's Managing Director Nick Dines is joined by Jace Tyrrell, Chief Executive of Opportunity London. They discuss London's strengths and challenges and how to bring investment into the capital.
So for today's edition of the Better Places podcast, we are joined by Jace Tyrrell, the new Chief Executive of Opportunity London. And Jace, many of our audience will be familiar with your previous role as Chief Executive of the New West End Company, which is a business improvement district for Oxford Street and the surrounds. You left to go to the New Sydney Waterfront Company, which I believe was the first improvement district in Australia. So what did you find to be the major difference in the way businesses operate in that sphere in London versus Sydney?
So if you're avid listeners, you'll tell I have a bit of an Australian accent. So growing up in Australia, over to London, then back again. So proper sort of boomerang Brit. But I think what was quite striking going back to Australia after not working there for 20 years is not much had actually changed since the 90s. They obviously have Uber now, which is great. And there's a few more flights coming back and forth. But I think what I really noticed from a business perspective is, London is a very collaborative market. And I think it's been doing that in real estate, in public and private sector for quite some time. I think, when I went down there to set up Australia's first improvement district, this was a very novel concept, to come together as property owners for the city and the state and the private sector. So that was actually really quite striking. What is great about Australia, obviously the weather, the lifestyle, the can-do attitude. There's a real kind of let's do business mindset down there, which is great. But I think, probably more authentic here in London and probably a bit more strategic and long-term, where I think Sydney and Australia is a bit more transactional. But both have values, and I think there's some really interesting work they're doing down under in the ESG space that we can actually learn from back here in London, which I hope we'll get a chance to talk on a little bit. But ultimately, the heart was in London and the boomerang Brit returns.
Oh, it's great to have you back. LinkedIn has sure missed you, and I'm sure I speak for many of us. Our LinkedIn timelines are full of your posts yet again. Now you're back in London. So you've come back to London after a year and a half's absence. I've got a number of prime ministers in that time. But aside from this, any noticeable differences to the London that you left behind?
Yeah, it's funny when you leave a city and actually just, spend a long time somewhere else, relative long time, you have sort of new perspective when you come back. And I think, seeing Singapore, seeing Malaysia, seeing how they did place-based investment, I thought we were really good at it here in London. But actually, there's more that we can do. I think on the negative side, you can tell our local authorities are really hammered in terms of their services. So I think just the day-to-day management, security, the cleaning, it's tough out there in terms of that. But I think what has shifted when I left was obviously coming out of COVID, there was a lot of vacancies, particularly in the centre of London. That's really moved on. You can see a lot more new businesses popping up. You can see more vibrancy in the city, which is great. I think the politics is still what it is in London in terms of perhaps the three levels of government effectively and sort of people wanting to work together. But I think, from a place-based investment point of view, you could see there was some changes on the ground floor and a different approach to sort of what people want and what people want to come to. And some of that's starting to sort of bear fruit and you're seeing that, but there's still quite a bit of way to go, I think, for London to turn the corner as we get into the next sort of decade ahead.
When you left the UK, I assume, as you handed over at MWEC, a lot of the plans were in place for bouncing back from COVID. And it must have been one of your major responsibilities at MWEC before you left. How do you think the West End and London has fared now we've bounced back? I mean, it's good to see Westminster Councillor taking action and seem to be hopefully moving out of those candy shops, which filled the void, didn't they, have some of those vacancies you mentioned? And we had a plethora of those when you were away, but hopefully the tide's turning on that one. But, I mean, how do you think, compared to other international cities, we have bounced back from COVID? Because clearly there's still challenges in the retail and leisure space.
Yeah. Look, I think the numbers are certainly going in the right way. And I think coming back in this role with all of London, so I'm going out to all bits, north, south, east, west, Croydon to Barking, down to Sutton, up into the city, the West End, Ealing. So you're sort of seeing different parts and different high streets and different developments. I think, particularly the city in the West End, the central activity zone that was very very impacted, obviously, by COVID. You can certainly see there are people back and there's vibrancy back in the offices. Obviously, the big question, and this same conversation was happening in every boardroom I sat in Sydney and Singapore, was how do we get our sort of commercial centres back to where they were in a different way? How do we make them profitable and enlivened and dynamic? And there's some great work with Destination City that the Corporation of London is doing. I know the West End BIDs and the BIDs more generally are working really closely with Westminster Council and other boroughs to try and enliven that. So look, I think the numbers are sort of going in the right direction. But I think there's something a bit more existential about London per se. You know, we have to reset the rhythm of the city, the way people use the city. And we're going to have to work through with both policy and incentives and a really vibrant ground floor plane to create more of that environment, which absolutely those enlightened landlords and those local authorities are really thinking around this. And I think Opportunity London has a role to play there as well in our partnership to bring that back. But look, never, never bet against London, I think would be sort of the history of 2000 years. And certainly I think we're doing better than some of those other global cities in terms of what's happening in their city centres and their commercial centres.
Brilliant. Well, you're now back here as Chief Executive of Opportunity London, which, for being honest, is an organisation that many of us have heard of, but not entirely sure, perhaps, what Opportunity London's role is, how it engages with the other local authorities, with the local authorities, I should say, in London and with the GLA. So it'd be great if you could kind of explain what it is Opportunity London does and what your major focus over the next 12 months is going to be, Jace, as the Chief Exec.
So look, it was a wonderful opportunity to be asked to come back and do this. And it was the NLA and London and Partners that have set this up. And your listeners will be very familiar, I hope, with those two organisations. But I put it in a nutshell. Basically, we're London's broker without a fee.
Okay.
And for all your agents listening, we can still do deals with you. So don't feel alienated by that. Because I think what we're trying to do is raise this next £100 billion of investment for the city for the next 20, 30 years for the long term. And we want to be one of the most sustainable cities, both economically and environmentally. And that's going to require institutional capital at scale. So what we're trying to do is to be London's broker, London's front door, to actually unlock that investment and make sure we deliver for Londoners and for the communities that, you know, these boroughs and we represent. So as you say, Nick, it's quite a unique partnership. You've got the GLA with some deputy mayors and Sadiq working with the City of London, working with all 32 London boroughs through London councils, with the private sector to effectively put together this pipeline of investable opportunities. So the three things we do, we put together the pipeline through some pretty robust measurement with our colleagues at JLL and Arup, who are helping us build up the business case and the planning piece around that. And I'll come onto some of those sectors, but actually putting together something that is investable. And then the second pillar of our work is to take that to the market, to actually talk to those long-term sovereign wealth funds, institutional investors, on what sort of investments, what level of investment, what sort of partnerships are they looking for in London, and really proactively managing that and supporting that process. And the third is when London goes around the world, whether it's MIPIM, Expo Real, we're visiting cities to understand what's going on, what good looks and feels like. It's one compelling narrative and one team London that's out there together. Without the politics, without the different layers of government, it's one sort of positioning for London on a global stage as that sort of broker and front door. So for a city, I think it's really unique to work like this. I think for our boroughs and our partners, who are a really important part of this, to work with an organisation that's out there on their behalf, selling London, selling these investable opportunities, that is value-adding. And I think that's going to be important given the amount of work they have to do with their day-to-day activities as well. And I think for us, working with the built environment community, the developers and those partners, actually being sort of agnostic to where the capital could be deployed, but actually having a portfolio of opportunities to match it, is going to be value-adding for the city.
The old saying of, if you wanted to contact someone in Europe, who would you phone to get a collective voice? Is this the kind of where we're trying to position, or where you are trying to position Opportunity London, which is, if you are looking to invest in the capital, Opportunity London can act as that gateway through that, then to conduit all the, because it must be very confusing. You're right, we have a myriad of different, well, the structure is quite remarkable, isn't it, really, in terms of local governance, and to an outside body looking in, it must be very head-scratching. So the idea is Opportunity London positions itself to the global investment market as the place to come for that initial phone call.
Absolutely right, and it is literally that. It is your front door into London, and if we can't help you, we will certainly know someone somewhere in London that can help you and hopefully do that deal. And I think it's important to recognise Opportunity London is institutional investment. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at the built environment, we're looking at real estate, energy and infrastructure. There is a wider team at London and Partners and Grow London and that network that will help you with sort of your occupiers, yes, if you like, and some of those programs and SMEs. We're looking at big capital projects that needs billions, mm-hmm, you know, of investment long-term that we can unlock through Opportunity.
What do you, obviously appreciate this is a question you haven't been in the role long, but in terms of pulling together the kind of major selling points for London, because I assume this is competing against Paris, this is competing against Rome, this is competing against Berlin, Madrid, to those who are looking to invest into Europe. What differentiates, do you think, London from those other major international cities?
It was really interesting because when I was in the West End, we did a bit of this work when we were thinking about retail and leisure brands to come to London. And, you know, we are in an absolute global marketplace. You know, we're a top global city. We have been, you know, for many hundreds of years, as I say, and, you know, 2,000 years of sort of our transformation. But what's really quite heightened in this last decade or so is we're in a really competitive marketplace. And when I was in Asia and went to those cities, when I was in the Middle East, you can see that they are investing at pace, at scale, to transform their economies for the next 100 years. And London has been very good at attracting capital. I mean, we were one of the most traded real estate markets in the world. We're very liquid. London in particular, but also our other cities are around the UK as well, are attractive. But what isn't helping us, and this isn't a party political point, is, you know, the planning process can be complicated. It can take many years. Sometimes you haven't got necessarily strong civic leaderships that you see in other cities that is working with institutional and long-term investors. Sometimes, you know, it's inconsistent, some of the approach to the decision-making that we have here. And at the moment, the cost of capital is extraordinarily high. And actually, those investors have a choice. They have a choice who they partner and a choice in the cities they want to invest. So our role, I think, at Opportunity London is to make it as frictionless as possible by working with those borough leaders, those partners that want this sort of capital, that these schemes and projects that actually investors can see are scalable, mm-hmm, over the long term. And also they meet their criteria, not just financial return, but also sort of environmental and social return. And the strength of the partnership is we have sort of that one platform to do that. But we are competing, as you say, mm-hmm, New York, Paris, Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, the Gulf. So we really need to get our act together and make it as easy as possible, yeah, and as seamless as possible to think around London and invest in London.
So really it's a simplification of what is could be quite a daunting process. It's probably one of the main challenges we face and what you see your role as being.
It is that. So that sort of front door to our clients, which are the investors. But I think what's been quite striking in my 2 months in the job and visiting about half a dozen boroughs and really understanding the GLA strategy and also the government, you know, with Michael Gove and DBT and others is, you know, actually going in and working with our borough partners to understand their strategy for the next 20 years, what land they have, what they want to do in terms of housing or other asset classes. And helping them do that from a market-facing perspective, I think there's going to be some real value here. And I think other cities in the UK could look at this model and also, mm-hmm, benefit from that. So I think, you know, it's still early days and this process of putting our pipeline together has been very methodical. But I think I opened our eyes to this need for some experts within the market to work with our borough partners to really help them and scale some of this stuff, maybe at sub-regional level. And I think it's been terrific, some of the response, you know, we've had already with some of our partners.
It's interesting. You've mentioned the public sector as partners a lot here, primarily the boroughs. But are you looking to strike more partnership approaches with the broader built environment community in London? I'm thinking more obviously private sector, potential future clients for you. And how do you see that playoff between the public sector on one hand and the private sector on the other and bringing them both together? I mean, what can the built environment do to help you in terms of making London the number one destination for inward investment?
Yeah. So I think there's sort of two KPIs we've got in this role, actually. One is, do we get that 100 billion, you know, invested over the next 20 years? Have we been, you know, there supporting and brokering those deals? And that really is the true measure of our success, mm-hmm, for the capital for future generations. But I think as an organization, we obviously need a bit of funding to do the work that we're doing as well. So, you know, we're sort of 20% funded by the public sector, and it's great. We've got the GLA, the City of London, London Councils, you know, the Mayor's Office all backing us, which is terrific. And we have sort of 20 partners in the built environment community that are owners, investors, developers, and some of those advisors in there who are helping us as well. So I guess to your listeners, shameless plug, we don't need a huge amount of operating budget, but I think a few more partners coming on board to help us, you know, with our strategy, with our pipeline, with unlocking some of those investment opportunities. I think there's business in it for them, but there's also business in it for London, and we want to broker that. So I think, you know, get in touch, obviously, to do that. And I think it's worth just sort of reminding listeners, because it is a new venture, that actually we talk a lot around housing and those requirements of housing, and living absolutely is one of our six asset classes. But actually, there's six altogether. Living is one of them, but the five others we've got leisure, we've got life sciences, we've got logistics, we've got learning, we've got low carbon workspace. So I think probably that is most of the built environment covered in that. But I think the work that we've been doing and launching at MIPIM this year is actually looking at those asset classes over the entire capital, where those clusters are, where we can scale. And it's fantastic. We've got Places for London and Network Rail that have just joined us as well. And they've obviously got a portfolio of opportunities across the capital. So I think it's terrific. I think more cities should do this. And I hope in a year's time we'll be sitting here and some of those deals would have happened. And actually we can point to a very different market and sort of investor sentiment on London in the global marketplace as well.
Brilliant. And just, I mean, Jase, I think everyone can sense from this podcast, and those who know you certainly know you are a very optimistic, glass half full person. So I know you, when I ask you this, you'll say, yes, you are optimistic for London's future. But why? Why London over other cities? And what do you think gives us the advantage over the next couple of years as you go out to the world to try and attract this investment?
Yeah. Look, I think it's fair to say, after everything we've all gone through in the last decade, London included, London's in a pretty bad mood at the moment. I think that's how I would sum it up coming back. And I think for lots of reasons. And I am optimistic. I think the work we do has to be optimistic. It's in the nature of what we're trying to do here. But I think, you know, I was quite struck when I was in Asia just before Christmas, talking to about 40 different investors. And, you know, the long term, we talk about this a lot, but it is still a very liquid city. You know, it is on the verge of being Europe's first $1 trillion economy this year. I mean, there are very few places in the world that could offer that as a city. Yeah. We are and continue to be the most global city in terms of its culture, its people, its age, its demographic. And that is going to be the future of global cities, that we have that mix. So we're starting in a very strong base, and we actually have opportunities for investment. You know, we've been very good over 2000 years, as I say, of transforming, and let's say never bet against London. You know, there's always a deal to be done in this city. So that's why I am optimistic. But I think, you know, we've got to remember, we've got to stop competing with each other and come together as Team London. And I think we can do that. And it's not against London versus the other cities. It's Team London. It's part of the UK, and it's cities together. So I think that's a big part of our mantra and be a measure of our success in the period ahead.
Brilliant.
As well.
And just for me, someone who's lived in London for close to 25 years now, it is for youthfulness and ability to regenerate and come up with new ideas on a constant basis with this young international population. It's amazing to be part of. And it does make us distinct from other major cities I've been to. It's just fantastic. I mean, so Jase, thank you very much for joining us on the latest edition of the podcast. Our agent listeners, you alluded to, have probably just picked themselves up off the floor after you said 100 billion. I'm sure that was interesting for them.
There's a deal to be done with the agents as well.
There is. But no, Jase, thank you very much for giving us your time today. I'm sure we'll all see you out and about on the London circuit over forthcoming weeks and months. And you're going to be in MIPIM, you said, with a bit of a launch opportunity, London.
Absolutely. So I hope many of your listeners will be down there. And if they're not, they want to hear more about what we're up to, get in touch. And opportunity.london, you can find all the information.
That's brilliant. Jase, on behalf of all of us here at Consilio, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that's it from us. Thanks for listening to another episode of Better Places. Don't forget to like and subscribe on wherever you get your podcasts. And we look forward to seeing you soon. Thanks very much for listening. Bye, 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 bye.